Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest Locked On Wolves podcast, where we are winging it organically. Joining me today is the host of the Locked On Vikings podcast. You hear his name all the time. I plug it on every episode, Monday through Friday, Sam Ekstrom. How you doing?
Good. It's good to make my debut on the program. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It won't be the last time you're here, but it is the first. You are the, however, you are not the first football guy to join me on this show.
Oh, no.
Arif Hassan was writing a piece after a Tuesday meeting and sat in and sort of...
I got to listen to that episode. I got to podcast that and hear his basketball takes.
You can find Sam Ekstrom on Twitter. It's just your name, right?
Yeah.
Sam, S-A-M, Ekstrom, E-C-K.
No.
Spell it.
E-K-S-T-R-O-M.
There you have it.
I've gone to two charity events in the past 2 weeks, and in both cases, my name has been misspelled, so I'm a little salty about it right now.
Wow. Yeah, I can't tell at all.
Cross to bear.
You can follow Locked On Wolves at Locked On Wolves. Zachary BD for me, if you dare. Sam, you saw the Wolves' victory over the Sixers, 110-86, all but the last few minutes, I'm told, which we can get into if you want to know. I do think they are worth discussing, but you know, Kevin Harlan, was he as great as he used to be during his time calling play-by-play? During the KG era?
I think Harlan was at his peak when he was calling Wolves games on radio in the late 90s. You know, that was when he was really having fun with it. I think he is forced to be a little more professional on TNT, which is understandable. He had some good moments, though, like when Towns rose up against Embiid on that slam, when LaVine had that putback dunk on the free throw. He gets going sometimes. He's got a good, great dunk voice, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Kind of get that
no
gravel.
No regard
to it.
For human life.
Up high,
down hard,
drops the hammer. So that was about 90% of the reason why I watched the game. Huge Kevin Harlan fan.
Do you have a favorite Kevin Harlan call?
Well, I mean, the drunk guy on the field, notwithstanding.
That one's legendary.
That's probably number one. Yeah, I do, but it's super nerdy. It's not recognizable. I listen to a lot of radio calls because I like to study it. And he had a call in the New Orleans Super Bowl in which the lights went out between San Francisco and Baltimore when Joe Flacco had a touchdown pass to Jacoby Jones in the third quarter, I think it was, that gave Baltimore a very significant lead. It was just – it was a masterpiece because he identified – two blocks, he had good verbs, he nailed the touchdown call. I mean, I could probably recite it for you, but I'm not going to because I wouldn't do it justice. But it's the greatest football call I've ever heard in my life.
Wow.
A 50-yard touchdown pass from Flacco to Jacoby Jones.
Well, transitioning to basketball, what did you think of the Wolves' performance against the Sixers?
Dominant. This team is starting to remind me of the 13-14 iteration of the Timberwolves, which is not a good thing at surface. You know, that was the team that dominated bad teams throughout that season. Kevin Love.
The 40-42
season. The 40-42
team.
Kevin Love, yeah. Kevin Love, Ricky Rubio. That was...
Kevin Martin.
Kevin Martin. Was Corey Brewer part of that unit?
Yep. Starting unit seventh in the league in offensive efficiency that season. Seventh.
Well, I want to say they tried Brandon Roy that year, or was that the previous year?
No, that was a year previous.
That was the previous year. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, they had, you know, that was a team that would go home and beat a team like Philadelphia by 30. Then they would go face a playoff team in Dallas, let's say. and they would lose the game at the wire. And they continued to lose every game in the fourth quarter because they were a great transition team and they were not a good half-court team. Now, this team has different issues. This team has, you know, mental toughness issues coming out in the third quarter. It's been documented well this season. They've blown 3-4 games because of their lackluster third quarters. Tuesday's game against Charlotte, prime example. Charlotte's a good basketball team. Philadelphia is not. Minnesota made them look bad. I think that's the first step, is when you make bad teams look like they should look, which is terrible, that means that you're not one of them. It means you're separating yourself from the fray. So at least the Wolves have created a bit of a gap between themselves and the basement of the league. Now, the next step is beating reputable teams on your home floor. Then you got to learn to go on the road and win. And that's a whole new test. They'll have to do it against Memphis on Saturday.
Yeah, no, we'll likely see the entire Memphis team, which is
it'll be different
from the one of the Wolves' victories this season. What was funny about the third quarter in last night's game is the Wolves actually had won it, and then Stauskas hits a 30-foot runner at the buzzer, and that makes the score for the third quarter 25-24. But yeah, all in all, as you said, a dominant performance. Another career night in terms of rebounding from Andrew Wiggins. He grabs a career high, tying 10 rebounds to go with his 35 points. It's his fourth career double double, third 30 plus point performance of the season. He's averaging 33 points, 5.3 rebounds, and 4 assists over his last 6 games, shooting 54% from the field, 52% from the 3-point arc. He ranks eighth in the league in scoring. I'm sorry. And he's still, I think, at the top of the 3-point shooting list among qualifying candidates. So that was really impressive. I think Thibodeau, because he was so mad after the Charlotte game, what was so funny about Thibodeau's post-game presser last night is he comes on stage and AP sports guy John Krasinski, as is custom, asks the first question, and the first words out of Thibodeau's mouth are, "I'm not disappointed."
he's a stickler, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's more of a perfectionist than probably any coach we've seen in this market in a long time.
Yeah, he's a basketball. I mean, they have a basketball coach on their hands. I mean, Flip Saunders was a basketball coach, but he did so much more. From his CBA days, he understood the entertainment value of basketball and the business side and all of that stuff. Thibodeau does not care about anything but what happens on the court.
Yeah. On a superficial level, he drives me bonkers, to be honest with you.
Really?
I mean, I'm sure he's a brilliant X's and O's guy, probably knows his stuff, but just his robotic nature on the sideline, he can never show any positive emotion. You can't be satisfied with a 30-point win. That bugs me because I think NBA is supposed to be fun, and I don't ever feel like Thibodeau is having fun. And he's annoying to listen to on the natural sound, you know?
Yeah, he joins the broadcast every night.
Yeah, it's like he just wants...
Could you hear him through the TNT?
No, you can hear him. Well, I was at the Charlotte game in the upper deck, and I could hear him. And then, yes, you could hear him on the TNT broadcast as well. So, not fond of him in that sense. You know, there's a difference between Mike Zimmer and Tom Thibodeau. Zimmer is the most popular coach in town, and people love when Mike Zimmer yells. It's the coolest thing ever. Because he shows that he's a human being by having emotional and poignant and calm moments. But Thibodeau's turned up to 11 all the time, which I think can bother a lot of fans. And if we have 5 years of this super hyped up Thibodeau, I'm telling you, it's going to get old. So that's my negative piece on Thibodeau. Now, positively speaking, we'll spin this around. The Timberwolves are a whole new offensive team. They can shoot the three. They're a modern NBA franchise. Does Sam Mitchell look foolish now or what? I mean, when he sat down with the indelible Britt Robson last year and Britt asked him, where's this team furthest away in? Sam was saying it's offense. You know, we don't have shooters. We can't shoot these threes. Well, either he was dead wrong or they underwent some incredible personal development in the offseason. Because Andrew Wiggins looks confident shooting these shots. Zach LaVine, confident. Karl-Anthony Towns shot 10 threes the other night against Charlotte. So clearly these guys feel like it's okay for them to be shooting threes, and that's half the battle, I think. Thibodeau has given them the green light. Mitchell didn't. And when you're not confident or when you're afraid to shoot a three for fear you might miss, that you're going to get chewed out, it's not a good way to play basketball. I think the Timberwolves are finally coming around to that style, and they feel okay about pulling the trigger.
Yeah, they've gone from a total post-entry offense where you rely on an entry into the post to draw the double team, and then you kick it out and swing it around to the open three-point shooter, which is archaic now in today's NBA, too, a predominantly pick-and-roll-oriented offense, side pick-and-roll, side screen and rolls, getting into, you know, what Golden State has made famous over recent seasons, especially with Curry and Bogut, you know, Curry or Draymond Green. Curry goes around to Draymond screen at the top of the key, hits him rolling down the lane. The rotating defender rotates down from his player, who is standing in the corner, Harrison Barnes, most often, leaving that corner three open. And you're seeing the Wolves do that a lot this season. So the offensive system has allowed the Wolves to, you know, showcase some of these talents, like LaVine, Wiggins. Wiggins has dramatically improved his three-point shooting, over 20 percentage points. Is it sustainable? We'll see. I don't think so. I think he'll come back to earth eventually, but you're absolutely right in that Sam Mitchell is sort of a lunatic for saying this team is far away offensively, especially when the five-man unit of Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, Towns, and Zhang last year had so much success. There was the win over Golden State and the win over Portland. And defensively, you could argue, and people have argued, David Thorpe, I don't know if you know who that is, ESPN's David Thorpe, said on Zach Lowe's most recent podcast, and I talked about this yesterday, that the Wolves were Sam Mitchell the last season, and everything that the Wolves were doing basically on the defensive end of the ball, that is, set them back. And Thibodeau has said on multiple occasions this season that he came into this job knowing that they had a long way to go. So the defense, I think, over time will improve. But offensively, I mean, they're the third best team in the league in terms of offensive efficiency, 110.7 points per 100 possessions. If you want to knit, you know, like I said, the Wiggins three-point shooting, is it sustainable? I don't know. Can Towns become a more productive player? Certainly. I don't know if that'll even out. The one thing Thibodeau was upset about last night was he didn't take any free throws. And he's...
Yeah, not for lack of trying, though. I thought he was appropriately aggressive.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of that deal where he's so strong that he absorbs contact pretty easily. And it'll be the classic case of young guy not getting respect, not getting to the line. But it's something that'll come. I thought last night was a great juxtaposition against Tuesday because Towns based his game around driving to the basket or getting the ball in post-up situations, using that hook shot that he's so good at. Obviously, the posterizing of Joel Embiid was spectacular early in the fourth quarter. And then he complemented it with a nice outside game instead of settling for those outside shots. I still think Towns needs to be primarily an inside presence because, I mean, that's just a stabilizing force on a team. When you have... If you're taking a series of bad shots or if you need to slow the game down, what works better than getting it to a big man inside who can make a play, earn his way to the line? I mean, that's what the Wolves missed with Pekovic, I think. Wouldn't you say? Even though, I mean, it's a slower pace, but it's a necessary pace sometimes in the NBA. When you have a big man who can, you know, catch it on the block and get a shot up no matter what and make it 60% of the time. That's what the Wolves, you know, need Towns to be. And I think he's dynamic enough that he'll be whatever he needs to be. You know, he can be the big. He can go on the outside if they need more of that. But, I mean, he's such a flexible, versatile player right now that, I mean, the sky's the limit, basically, for Karl-Anthony.
Yeah, and you could invert the offense, too, in a way that makes Andrew Wiggins that post-up player who you can say, all right, we need a bucket, let's go to Wiggins in the post. Wiggins is in the 84th percentile among all players in post-up situations this year, scoring just over a point per possession. But it's night and day the way the offense has improved. Tibbs was really complimentary of the Wiggins-Towns pick and roll game, which we've seen a lot more, especially in fourth quarters. I think it's interesting that they in the fourth quarters, you oftentimes see Wiggins bringing the ball up and getting into sets that way. And Thibodeau alluded to that yesterday, and he even said that they can use Towns as the primary ball handler, offensive facilitator. it just hasn't gotten to that point yet. So I think offensive versatility, we're going to see the Wolves expand in that regard throughout the season. But defensively, yesterday's performance was probably their best of the season, hands down.
Also playing Philadelphia, so take it with a grain of salt. Philadelphia, yeah, without Noel, without Simmons, without Bayless.
Jared Bayless.
Bayless, yeah, and a minutes restriction for Embiid. Just not a good basketball team. I feel bad for them. But defensively speaking, it seems like, I don't know if it's slow rotations or poor closeouts, seems like teams are still pretty easily getting the perimeter shot, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. They're just porous overall, I think. Yeah. Down low, the rotations are poor. I don't know Tibbs' scheme intricately enough to know how the rotations are supposed to work. I know that from press row, when the defense is rotating, when they're in a situation where they need to rotate, you can hear Thibodeau yelling at players and where they're supposed to rotate. And that, to me, is incredible. But I've talked to Zach LaVine about it. They spend over half of the practice doing shell drills and trying to stay in sync in terms of moving as one. The gambles have been a problem. You might remember the possession against Charlotte in the third quarter where LaVine goes for a steal as Batum comes around a pin down and ends up basically in the backcourt, and Batum makes an easy pass to Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker hits a three. Plays like that, I think, have hurt the Wolves. And you mentioned Britt Robeson earlier. You made me aware of his piece about Karl Anthony Towns and Hero Ball.
Yeah.
And I think Hero Ball on the defensive end, not just for Towns, but for the rest of the Wolves, has been a thing too. Ricky is definitely a culprit in that sense, a gambler going for steals, and more often than not it pays off for him, but working in unison I think has been their biggest problem.
Well, yeah, that was my next point, because let's look at the starting five individually. Rubio is an above average individual defender. I think Towns is an above average individual defender. And I would say Wiggins has the tools too. I would say the majority of their starting five are good defenders. So it's more about the synergy and the cohesion than it is about the individual skills. And that's what Thibodeau is for. I mean, because last year, Mitchell didn't seem to find any way to galvanize that defense. So they bring in this guy who's had schemes in place before that will work. So I'm sitting here in good faith thinking that by Christmas, the defensive numbers will improve. Because I think it takes a while to get defensive bad habits out of your system, maybe even more than offensive, especially when it's not just about you, it's about the players around you. I think sometimes guys get wrapped up in themselves on the defensive end, not aware of their surroundings. I think this Wolves team will be good defensively, just because and if you look at the bench too, with Chris Dunn, I think he's a fantastic defender.
Yep, Cole
already.
Aldrich has been a great rim protector
Cole
this season.
Cole Aldrich, yes, yeah, I like his addition. Shabazz, probably not. Bielitsa, probably not.
Offensively, Bielitsa does some awesome stuff.
Is he your best bench guy right now?
He's my boy, personally, if you're asking.
Harlan had difficulty pronouncing his name. That's okay.
Did he? Yeah, it's not the first time that's happened. The Kings guys at the end of last season didn't even try. Bless Grant Napier and his cohort escapes. The name of his cohort escapes me, but
Bajelica?
Yeah, Bajelica. Yeah, it's just been awful. But no, if on a tangent, Bielitsa, he's been out of necessity deployed at the three, and a big reason for Wiggins' strong performance last night was Philly's lack of perimeter defenders. Robert Covington physically is the only person capable of matching up against Wiggins. 6'9", 215, 220.
They've got small guys. I mean, yeah. McConnell and Stauskas are like my size.
Yeah, Sergio Rodriguez, not tough at all. So that enabled Wiggins to have a huge night, both shooting over smaller players and being able to post up and take advantage of them in the post. Now, where that has helped Bielitsa, especially in the LA game and last night, is he's playing the three. He's able to see over the top of defense. He could shoot over the top of defenders without worrying that his shot is going to be blocked, and the game is just much easier that way. But at the same time, and this hasn't happened yet, teams should be able to exploit Bielitsa's deficiencies on the defensive end of the ball if they have a more versatile playmaking wing player like a Nick Batum, if he was playing the four, or if Harrison Barnes is playing the four, or even, let's see, like Al-Farouq Aminu in Portland, for example, is another guy who would be able to just blow by Bielitsa off the dribble, but nobody who he's matched up with during his time at the three has been able to do that. So, yeah, he's probably your best, most versatile guy off the bench offensively, but defensively, I don't think he brings a whole lot to the table.
Yeah, well, but at least the offensive game has now reached a point where you can take a few lumps defensively because you know you're going to get a sharp shooting three-point shooter. Seems to be decent around the rim as well, which, you know, last year, every time he'd catch the ball, it was, I don't know if you watch much Gopher basketball, but it was Joey King. It was Joey King with the hideous Lifetime Fitness pump fake, followed by like two dribbles in and then think about shooting along two and then maybe pass it off and get in trouble, lose your dribble. And I think he's finally got that out of his system.
Yeah.
He feels like he's actually catching and shooting in rhythm this year.
Not totally, but he's improving.
He's getting there. I think even from game one to game 11, he's been better. You know, you think back to the Denver game where they lost by three at home. He had a couple moments.
Where
he shot at the end, it went in and out. But before that, he had a couple moments,
wide
too,
open three,
where he's
down,
passing up wide open shots. So he's going to be a weapon, though. I mean, he's tall. He's lanky. He can get his shot up over just about anybody, as he proved in that Denver game at the end. So I like what he's become in year two a lot. I think the bench as a whole, though, still has a lot of work to do, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and they need to be healthy, too. Like, the Bielitsa at the three thing probably stops when Brandon Rush and Shabazz Muhammad are healthy enough to play, because Shabazz Muhammad, physically, he's tough enough, and he's got that post game, which Bielitsa doesn't have, by the way, to take advantage. You know, he can play the four, he can body smaller threes, and so I just think that goes away as a sort of a patchwork band-aid temporarily. Bielitsa at the threes definitely work, but we talked about cohesion a few minutes ago. The bench cohesion is certainly not there. Tyus Jones, I think, would bring a lot to that second unit if he's able to, you know, overall I think Thibodeau is still tinkering with different lineup combinations and things of that nature, but he tends to rely on his starters for a majority of the game anyway. So if he can play different bench units just to sort of stabilize things while the starters are out and give a different look, I think that's basically what he needs to do. It's not like years past where the bench unit is playing as often as they were, between 20, 25 minutes. I mean, we're talking about 10, 15 minutes with the Aldridge and the Chris Dunn, those lineups.
I'm curious why Tyus Jones isn't getting the minutes he did even last week, because I thought he was playing pretty well, but it seems like they've gone more to Dunn now as the backup to Rubio. Do you have any insight into that?
I mean, obviously Dunn is Thibodeau's baby. We can describe him as such because of the, you know, the draft status. It's his first draft pick, and he sort of encapsulates what I think is Thibodeau's, you know, toughness, you know, what he wants to see his team do. I thought in the recent, what was the game?
There, LA?
Might have been LA. No, it wasn't. It was the Clippers, when the game was basically out of reach, a little over the 5-minute mark in the fourth quarter. Thibodeau brings in Tyus Jones with the starting unit. And as you mentioned before, he played well. The things he brings, you know, he's able to organize and set up an offense and space the floor with his 3-point shooting. But the point guard situation has been perplexing. Thibodeau was complimentary of both Dunn and Rubio last night. I think he likes what both of those guys do on the defensive end. But as has been well documented, neither of them can shoot very well. And so I sort of like the idea of, going back to that, the Clippers game I just mentioned, Tyus hadn't played at all. And Thibodeau is bringing him off the bench in the fifth or sixth, you know, with five or six minutes left in the fourth quarter. So I think the confidence in Tyus is there. I think he knows what he can get out of him. I just don't think he's figured out, as is the case with the lineups thing, how to use all of these players or how he wants to use them quite yet. So defense, it's certainly the point guard situation is definitely one of the most befuddling parts of the season for me.
Well, I challenged you yesterday, we were talking off air, to look at the numbers of the team with Rubio on the floor and without Rubio on the floor the last few games.
And you obviously didn't listen to the program couple days ago, or yesterday, because I did talk about it.
Good.
I did discuss it. I can pull those up right now. Let's do it. We got some dead air that we can try to avoid.
But. I mean, point being that I think it's actually been kind of a rough start for Rubio. I mean, granted, when he was hurt, the Wolves weren't winning at all. So you still want him on your team. But I think offensively, he's been hurting them more than he usually does. He's been sloppier with the basketball. You mentioned he's a gambler on the defensive end. Last couple of games, he's been gambling a lot on the offensive end, trying to be too cute, I think, with some passes, you know, driving into traffic and trying to thread the needle, trying to pass it over people's outstretched arms. Very uncharacteristic of Rubio to make those kind of mistakes game after game. I mean, he'll have some games, you know, where he's got six turnovers, but seems like he's making it a regularity, which is a little concerning. Not too much, because he has a lot of equity in the league. He'll probably figure it out, but in that sense, Dunn has actually been more valuable because he's not killing you on the offensive end as much.
Yeah, he knows when not to shoot. And as poorly as he shot, that's one of Dunn's awareness that, hey, I'm not the best shooter. I probably shouldn't shoot. That is a good thing. In Rubio's defense, I guess the easy points would be you look at the teams he's played on over previous seasons. He's used to having to do a lot more in terms of playmaking. And Thibodeau's system, as I mentioned earlier, is far less dependent on a traditional point guard in the sense that they need to put everybody in place and orchestrate the offense. It's just a much simpler system with the high side screen and rolls and things like that. So you're seeing LaVine and Wiggins able to bring up the ball and initiate offense that way a lot more. But you're right. Rubio is a gambler offensively. He tries to make plays, get to the rim, and sometimes it pays off. He's got a good chemistry with Towns. He'll drive and get under the hoop, almost like the hockey play where they go around the net and just dump it right in front, and Towns will often be there for the dunk. But Gorgui Dieng, you know, not the same. It's just a little different. So the on-off numbers, Wolves are 5.4 points better when Rubio is off the court. 5.4 points better than their opponent when Rubio is off the court, and when he is on the court, the Wolves are slightly less than 1 point better than their opponent. So positives on both, but more positive when he is off the court.
Do the Timberwolves have a positive plus minus this year overall point differential?
As far
just overall point differential, I feel like they got to be close to positive, right?
Well, their net rating is 4.9.
No, I mean not even in that. Just total points scored, point differential.
2 seconds.
Okay,
I think so.
Because they've blown out the teams in every win, haven't they?
That would be that's the fatal flaw of these statistics. Is
right.
That there's the big blowout win over Memphis, and then last night's win over
Memphis,
Philly.
LA, Philly.
They've outscored their opponents by 42 points.
Yeah. Now, Jim Peterson is under the impression that they're a sleeping giant because of those first quarter ratings, second quarter ratings, fourth quarter ratings. They've been far superior in almost every sense except for the third quarter. So do you think that actually has weight? Like this team is just waiting to explode?
Yeah, I think consistency. Once they get the consistency thing down, I think explode is such a strong term, but if you can play consistently, I think they have a chance to win on a nightly basis, and that's big. The one thing I've sort of hammered in recent days has been, you know, how do you learn to value every single possession, both offensively and defensively, if you haven't been in the playoffs yet? Because in the playoffs is when I think teams, players, coaches realize that every single possession matters. And the Wolves have just played, you know, everybody on the team right now has played so much meaningless basketball. Even Towns, I mean, most of last season was meaningless in the sense that they weren't competing for anything. And they're just sort of taking their blows and getting reps and trying to improve. But when you do that, you lose sense of the micro perspective in that every single possession matters. Like the game against Denver, those last few possessions aren't as significant if they value some of the earlier ones a little more. Like, you could say that those last few possessions cost them the game, but at the same time, you could go back and find other possessions that did it too. So I think there's weight to what Peterson is saying, for sure. It's just a matter of them figuring it out. But, I mean, his argument is basically, look how well they play three quarters of the game. Imagine if they could play well, in four quarters of the game, even if you're taking, even if their performance in the three quarters isn't as effective as it is.
Well, even go back again to that 2013-14 team. They were a metric darling that season in terms of point differential. You mentioned offensive rating. They were seventh. That was a good basketball team, but fatal flaw, they didn't know how to play in the half court when they needed to score.
Yeah.
And Pekovic missed about seven bunnies that would have cost them or would have won them games. I swear, that season...
Kevin Martin didn't get foul calls in fourth quarters.
Kevin Love got slapped on the hand by Sean Marion. Ed Malloy! Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, you know, luck sometimes plays into it. But I think to some extent, that team was... What do you think the flaw in that team was, really?
Bench.
Bench.
They didn't have one.
Yeah.
Alexei Shved was one of the main components off the bench.
And that seems to be kind of a flaw in this team, too. So you hope it doesn't go down the same road.
I think it's much better than that. Berea.
Berea,
Alexei Shved. Was Robbie Hummel playing, I think?
Always ready, Robbie. He might have been.
Gorgui Dieng got some minutes late in the season. Shabazz Muhammad did too, but I don't think they were huge roles. I can't even remember their bench unit. Aside from that, though, Adelman just had no interest in defending either. Defense was definitely an issue. No rim protection between Love and Nikola Pekovic. Mm-hmm. Kevin Martin, not a very good defender. Ricky Rubio was the best defender on the team. Corey Brewer gets a lot of steals, definitely a gambler too. So that was the fatal flaw of that team. But stylistically, I think the Wolves of present day play in a way that the fourth quarters will come and they can continue to be effective. I don't think, they don't have a situation where they're relying on foul calls like the Kevin Martin thing. I think the way that they play benefits them for games when, clutch time scenarios in the fourth quarter. So I think they're set there. I think they're playing in a way, both offensive and defensively, that is set up for success. I just don't think they've figured out schematically what Thibodeau wants to do on both ends of the floor yet. And they also haven't figured out how to do it consistently. So, but I mean, it's early. It's only 11 games into the season. 4-7, the Wolves are. They are about to embark on a road trip. Let's look at the schedule. Why I wanted to talk to you about the end of last night's game is one of the most fascinating things about Tom Thibodeau this season has been the fact that they don't even set up a chair for him to sit in. He spends most of his time bellowing from the scorer's table. He got into what appeared to be a pretty heated argument with St. Paul's finest Ken Maurer. About a call that was made when the Wolves were up 27 points, and Ken Maurer's like, "It was a foul," like right in Tibbs' face, and Tibbs turned, "That's bullshit!" Just so furious. It was so funny, but with like 2 minutes left, Thibodeau went over to the bench, some assistant came over, opened up a chair, Tibbs sat down.
Is that his first sit down of the
first time I've ever
season?
Seen it? And I'm actually pissed that it happened, because him standing through the duration of an entire game has been the best part of his coaching tenure with the Wolves for me, or at least one of the more comedic. Anyway,
Ken Maurer is at the center of every controversy, isn't he?
Has to be. Is he related to Joe?
Yeah,
he is.
Uncle, I think.
Uncle. The Wolves are in Memphis on Sunday?
Saturday.
Saturday. That's tomorrow, November 19th. So Memphis is somebody that they've seen enough of, I think. They twice in the preseason, saw them once already this season in the opener, and then again with the in the third game of the season, they'll get them again tomorrow. I think it's a winnable game. Although Memphis just did beat the hottest team in the league the other night. On the road, if you saw it, they defeated the Clippers, I think.
Handed them their second loss.
Yeah, something like 110-105, which I was taken aback by. They come home on Sunday, the Wolves do, to take on the Boston Celtics, and then they embark on a three-game road trip where they'll face New Orleans, winnable. Phoenix, certainly winnable. And then Golden State on the 26th.
Is that at home?
That's on the road.
Ah. They've been good in back-to-backs this year on the second half of them. So that Boston game might shape up well. They seem to have...
It's not a back-to-back, but...
I thought you said Saturday, Sunday they play.
No, the Monday, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
They have a day off in between. But the young legs have... the team is very confident in their ability to play back-to-backs. So, yeah. Sam Ekstrom, thanks for joining me today. Host of the Locked On Vikings podcast. Also a contributor to ColdOmaha.com. Covers the Gophers. Gopher basketball guy now. How's that coming? 3-0.
St. John's tonight.
St. John's?
St. John's tonight at the Barn.
That's the New York St. John's?
The real St. John's.
Got
Big
it.
East. Big wow. East school.
There's a history of stoicism there, I think.
Minnesota's got a fun stretch coming up. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Sam Ekstrom, my live tweet through most of the games. Articles, ColdOmaha.com. They got St. John's. Then they have Arkansas. Two games after that, they have Florida State and then Vanderbilt. So a fun non-conference schedule. Rarely do you see that in Minnesota, but should be a good stretch. Should be a trying stretch for Minnesota to see if they can pull through, win some of these games against good competition. I think they're much improved. I've been on the train that Minnesota is going to be better this year. If they can emerge from this five-game stretch or four-game stretch like 3-1, there's reason to think they can be competitive in the Big Ten this year.
Nice. I like it. I like the optimism. Just for reference, Wolves are 2-0 on the second night of back-to-backs.
There it is. Orlando and the Lakers, their two wins, right?
Yeah. Outscoring, they're 21 points better than their opponents, averaging 124 points a game. So,
well, and they caught the Sixers on the back end of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
And they looked disinterested.
Yeah, they did not look good. Sergio Rodriguez didn't take a free throw. He's taken three all year. Joel Embiid, bless his heart. Couldn't do much.
No.
And Ersan Ilyasova, he's a nice player.
He was the best guy on the floor.
I did spit the shit a little bit with Jordan Hill after the game, and I have throughout the season just because of my U of A loyalty. And he is one of the few remaining players in the league. You can name him on two hands who played for Lute Olson back in the day, and Jared Bayless. You know, he Jordan Hill and I were the only two people in the building last night upset that Jared Bayless was unable to suit up, because he also played for Lute Olson. I actually saw Jared Bayless score 44 points against the high school where I, you know, when I was a freshman in high school, Sunny Slope High School in Arizona, state semifinal. Jared Bayless, 44-point performance, knocked us out of the state tournament. So
wow.
We're rambling. This has been the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're going to go. So talk to you on Monday. So long.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.